play my music right across the country. Played from north to south and east to west. In hot times when I've had to go hungry, I've never given less than my best. I played it loud and fast in New York City, picked it with the best of New Orleans. In Texas I was downright mean and dirty, but I've never played the place of my dreams. 'Cause it's a long road to Nashville, the only place I wanna be. A long road to Nashville, to Nashville, Tennessee.
Hello, it's Danny Boyle, and I'm doing a little show about Nashville, Tennessee. And that was Sean Fahey, who recorded that song in 2023. And the song is called Long Road to Nashville. And he's one of the new names in Irish country music. And I'm not sure if he's been to Nashville, but I'm sure it's one of his dreams to go and visit Music City, USA. It's a long road. According to the Aer Lingus, it's almost 4,000 miles from Dublin to Nashville, Tennessee. And so many of our Irish artists over the years has made that trip. Larry Cunningham, I believe, was one of the first artists to do that way back in 1971. And he recorded an album, Songs Fresh from Nashville. And this was his single from that album, Good Old Country Music.
I remember Daddy playing the wildwood flower as we gathered round the parlor of our home. Uncle Wesley played the fiddle and Junior played the banjo. We'd sing and dance the whole night long. Mama played the upright piano, and I guess it must have been a treat to hear all the neighbors gather round. They loved that country sound, and it was surely music to our ears. And that's how I learned to love good old country music. There's something about it close to my soul. I'm so glad everybody's loving good old country music. It's the music of the country. This country is my home.
Yes, when we think of Nashville, we think of good old country music. What made Nashville so special, if you like, was that it had a radio station, WSM, which stands for We Shield Millions, and it went on air for the first time on October the 5th, 1925, and it was backed by an insurance company, National Life and Accident Insurance Company, and it had a lot of dollars behind it. From the very get-go, it had one of the most powerful signals in the South. In the beginning, WSM was rated at 1,000 watts, which put it in the top 15% of radio stations across the country, and it gave exposure to locals hundreds of miles away. Within a few months, it boosted its signal to 50,000 watts. The Grand Ole Opry show began about a month later after the station started broadcasting. Early on, it was called the WSM Barn Dance, a direct imitation of the WLS Barn Dance in Chicago. And over the next three decades, there would be many well-known Saturday night country music shows on radio and in TV in cities like Shreveport, Wheeling, Knoxville, and Springfield, Missouri. Most of these shows paid their stars very little, and the artists considered their appearance to be more like commercials that would allow them to book into schoolhouses and gyms around the local area. They didn't make a lot of money on the live shows either. The Opry was different from other radio shows. For one thing, its reach across America was huge. In the 40s, still wanting to be the best and the biggest, they went on this massive talent drive to attract all the hot hunks of the day, Red Foley, Hank Williams, Eddie Arnold, and Roy Acuff, to name a few.
Listen to the jingle, the rumble and the roar, as she glides along the woodland, through the hills and by the shore. Hear the mighty rush of the engineer, that lonesome hobo's call. You're traveling through the jungles on the Wabash Cannonball.
Roy Acuff there with Wabash Cannonball. And a lot of his earlier stuff was cut in Chicago. Eddie Arnold, he went to New York several times to record. And it was only in the arrival of Acuff Rose Publishing Company, that was Roy Acuff and Fred Rose, in December 42, and the Victor Recording Team in December of 44 were the first steps towards Nashville becoming a music business centre. In 1976, Susan McCann went to Nashville and she worked with Porter Wagoner and she recorded two albums in 1 week. That was the magic of Nashville. You could go out there, have the musicians available, all the technicians were there, they knew exactly what they had to do and the album was ready.
You've come back a little too late now to tell me that you've changed. Even if you have, oh, I could never feel the same. Crying time for me is over.
Happiness. You're the only thing that stands between me and loneliness. You're the only reason now that I exist. You're my last chance. Happiness.
That was Porter Wagoner, and before that we had Susan McCann, who appeared 6 times at the Grand Ole Opry. Well, Lou Bradley, who would engineer some of the Nashville's greatest sessions way back in the 60s and 70s, and I had the pleasure of meeting Lou Bradley when we were on our honeymoon way back in 1981. Lovely man, and he showed me around Columbia Studios, and we even had Sunday lunch at his house where he introduced me to Hargis Pig Robbins, the session guitar player as well. But Lou was in the studio one day mixing records when producer Owen Bradley, no relation to him, would drop by and visit. And Lou asked him, he said, Owen, you've seen the whole music business evolve, because he played music since the 30s in Nashville. And he said, can you point to one thing that really lifted the recording off the ground and got it going? And without a question of a doubt, he said, Ernest Tubb. Ernest Tubb chose to record here in 47. He said, Ernest Tubb was one of the big stars of the Grand Ole Opry at that time, and he could have recorded anywhere. And he said, no, I'm going to record it here in Nashville. And that gave Nashville the credentials.
You left me and you went away. You said that you'd be back in just a day. You've broken your promise and you've left me here alone. I don't know why you did, dear, but I do know that you're gone. I'm walking the floor over you. I can't sleep a wink, that is true. I'm hoping and I'm praying as my heart breaks right in two. Walking the floor over you. Oh, pick it out, Smitty.
Philomena Begley visited Nashville many times in 1978. She was on stage with Porter Wagoner at the Grand Ole Opry and recorded her album Nashville Country.
I don't mind this waiting for you while you're gone. But darling, are you ever coming home?
Rightfully given credit as the founder of WSM's Grand Ole Opry, George D. Hay was a remarkable visionary and a colourful romantic who played a vital role in the commercialisation and the promotion of country music. In 1924, he won the Radio Digest poll as the most popular announcer in the country, and this led to him being offered the job as radio director for the newly opened WSM in Nashville, and he accepted, and on November the 9th, 1925, began working at the station. It was late November 1925 that George D. Hay invited a 78-year-old fiddler from Tennessee, Uncle Jimmy Thompson, to come up and play at his microphones. He later wrote that he was astounded at the calls and telegrams that poured in, and in late December 1925, he announced, due to the audience interest, WSM would feature a 1 hour or two of old-time tunes every Saturday night. It was George D. Hay, too, who redubbed the programme Grand Old Opry in 1927. For the past hour, we've been listening to music taken from the Grand Opera. From now on, we will present the Grand Old Opry.
And there'll be tears at the Grand Old Opry tonight.
Wanda Jackson with Tears at the Opry Tonight. Well, in Nashville, there's a saying, it all begins with the song. And music publishing is the heart and soul of the music business. 100 or more years ago, the song publisher was like a book publisher. He found the writer, took the work of that writer, printed it up, and sold it to the public. The book publisher's product was the book. The song publisher's product was a piece of sheet music for piano. In 1942, Nashville had a very successful national radio show in the Grand Ole Opry, but it had no important record companies. And it had no significant song publishers either. That year in Nashville, the Opry's biggest star shook hands with a reformed alcoholic who was an extraordinary songwriter. That handshake was the beginning of the Nashville music industry. Roy Clarkson Acuff was a hillbilly singer from Maynardville in the mountains of East Tennessee. By 1942, he was about as big as you could get in country music, with a spot of the Grand Ole Opry's national network portion, lucrative touring dates, and a presence on the silver screen. That year, his income rose to the neighbourhood of $200,000, an enormous amount of money, especially in the still impoverished South. Fred Rose was a Tin Pin Alley style songwriter from Chicago who had moved to Nashville and had his own radio show. In spite of his alcoholic past, he had a great reputation in Nashville as an honest man who knew songwriting and publishing. His songwriting resume included not only pop standards like Did I Do and Red Hot Mama, but recent success in the cowboy song field with co-writers like Gene Autry and Ray Whitley. After a short period of reluctance, Rose agreed to form a partnership with Acuff. Their first year, Acuff Rose scored with a pair of Bob Wills cuts, and in 1945, the company had two of the top seven charted country songs. Over the next decade, they would be some big things in store for Acuff Rose, including numerous Fred Rose written hits and some standards by Pee Wee King and Red Stewart. But the defining moment for this company was the arrival in Nashville of a skinny, nearsighted kid from Montgomery, Alabama. His name was Hiram King Williams, but he called himself Hank.
I got a feeling of the blues, oh Lord, since my baby said goodbye. Lord, I don't know what I'll do. All I do is sit and sigh. Oh, Lord, that last long day she said goodbye. Well, Lord, I thought I would cry. She'll do me, she'll do you. She's got that kind of loving. Lord, I love to hear her when she calls me sweet. Daddy, such a beautiful dream. I hate to think it all over. I've lost my heart, it seems. I've grown so used to you somehow. Well, I'm nobody's sugar daddy now. And I'm lonesome. I got the lovesick blues.
That song, Lovesick Blues, sold more than 600 copies in the first 2 weeks, and in less than 2 months, it was sitting at the top spot on the country charts, and it stayed there for 16 weeks. Hank also recorded and wrote songs like Moving On Over, Your Cheating Heart, Jambalaya, I Can't Help It, Hey Good Lookin'. And these songs began to resurface as pop hits by the likes of Tony Bennett, Guy Mitchell, and Frankie Lane, to name a few. Most Music Row songwriters regard their songs as their children, and they treasure the best of them. Hank Williams and Fred Rose were the founders of this glorious tradition. From that time forward, Nashville's music business, and later Music Row, would be built around relationships between the songwriters and their publishers. Now back to the Irish connection and the attraction that Nashville has for Irish country music artists who record and perform. In 1980, Big Tom wanted so much to go to Nashville but had a fear of flying that he travelled by boat on the QE2 to New York and then busted by Greyhound down to Nashville. And he recorded an album called Blue Wings. That must have been a very long journey for a Big Tom, travelling by boat and then by Greyhound, and then having to do the return journey as well. It must have taken months to do so. Two brothers who had a big influence in the Nashville recording business were Owen and Harold Bradley, and they saw a need for recording studios. Both were session players. In fact, Harold played with an orchestra and did a lot of touring and played a lot of music in and around the Nashville area. In 1946, the most commercial country sessions were being recorded in Chicago or in New York. So the Bradley brothers decided they would convert a room in the Tulane Hotel at the corner of 8th Avenue and Church Street, and they called it Castle Studio. And Ernest Tubb cut his first Nashville session there. It was a very basic studio, and during the week they did recordings in the Rhinen Auditorium downtown because it sounded much, much better. Everything was going quite well for the Bradley brothers as far as the recording studios were concerned until 1954, when Decca Records vice president had mentioned to Owen that he was thinking of moving the country recording business to Dallas. Immediately, Owen realized he would lose a lot of money and a lot of work. So he proposed, what would happen if we built a studio to suit your needs? We have all the musicians here, the backing singers like Anita Kerr and Bob Moore, Harold Bradley, the A-team session musicians. So that was agreed, and they bought a piece of property, which was basically a house, on 804 16th Avenue for £7,500.
From the corners of the country, from the cities and the farms, with years and years of living tucked up underneath their arms, walk away from everything just to see a dream come true. So God bless the boys who make the noise on 16th Avenue. With a $1 million spirit and an old flat top guitar, they drive to town with all they own in a $100 car. One time someone told them about a friend of a friend they knew who owns, you know, a studio on 16th Avenue. Now some are born to money, they've never had to say survive, and others swing a 9-pound hammer just to stay alive. There's cowboys, drunks, and Christians, mostly white and black and blue. They've all dialed a phone collect to home from 16th Avenue. Ah, but then one night in some empty room where no curtains ever hung, like a miracle, some golden words roll off of someone's tongue. And after years of being nothing, they're all looking right at you. And then for a while, they'll go in style on 16th Avenue. Hey, it looks so uneventful, so quiet and discreet, but a lot of lives were changed out on that little one-way street. Cause they walk away from everything just to see a dream come true. So God bless the boys who make the noise on 16th Avenue. From the corners of the country, from the cities and the farms, with years and years of living tucked up underneath their arms, walk away from everything.
The property on 16th Avenue was basically a residential home They knocked out most of the middle floor, so the studio had a high ceiling and a small echo chamber the size of a fireplace. But the hits started coming. George Jones recorded White Lightning and Ferlin Husky Gone.
Oh, 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 what I do. The love that I've tasted, I was wrong. Now you've gone.
Now you've gone.
Nashville also recorded rock and roll hits. Elvery Brothers, backed by Chet Atkins. Brenda Lee, produced by Owen Bradley. Roy Orbison, produced by Fred Foster. And Elvis, after leaving Sun Records for RCA, recorded many classic hits in RCA Studio B in the heart of what would become Nashville's music growth. Nashville responded to rock and roll by evolving towards a more cosmopolitan sound. Fiddle and slate guitars gave way to lush orchestrations and honeyed harmonies. Producers Chet Atkins and Owen Bradley relied on the skilled studio musicians, the A-Team, whose creative input and quick adaptability made them vital to their hit-making process.
Put your sweet lips a little closer to the phone. Let's pretend that we're together all alone. I'll tell the man to turn the jukebox way down low. And you can tell your friend there with you, he'll have to go.
Jim Reeves with He'll Have to Go. And that was the beginning of what's known as the Nashville Sound. A few Nashville veterans, Eddie Arnold and Ray Price and the likes of Marty Robbins, found that their voices blended well with this new urban flourishes. And it brought a lot of new listeners to country music as well.
Well, I never felt more like crying all night, 'cause everything's wrong and nothing ain't right without you. You got me singing the blues. The moon and stars no longer shine. The dream is gone, I thought was mine. There's nothing left for me to do but cry over you. Well, I never felt more like running away. But why should I go? 'Cause I couldn't stay without you. You got me singing the blues.
Dottie West with Here Comes My Baby. Now, some country traditionalists balked at such moves, complaining that the uptown sounds took country music too far from its down-home roots. But Nashville continued to present artists with traditional styles alongside the sweetened production of some of its stars. Country music had always been a big tent genre that responds to changes in popular culture by bringing in new influences. The Nashville sound was a reaction to its time, as well as another step in the genre's ongoing evolution. Brian Call went to Nashville not once but twice and recorded two albums, Brian Call in Nashville and Tennessee Sunshine. And the late great Charlie Pride tried to persuade Brian to stay in Nashville and said to him, "You'll be the next Slim Whitman if you stay." But Brian decided, "No, I want to go back home. That's where I belong. That's where I play my music."
Just before the sunrise in the morning, I'll be on a highway heading home. Home is just a little bit east of Nashville, where the Tennessee River winds along. Lord, I wanna hear the roosters crowing, Starwood Mountains, I got that homesick feeling in my bones. I'll trade these traveling blues for some Tennessee sunshine, Tennessee sunshine, you loving me.
In another sign of country music's growing popularity, many big names from other fields, including Ray Charles, The Byrds, Bob Dylan, drew heavily on country influences in the 1960s. Ray Charles' album, the 1962, Modern Sounds in Country and Western Music, re-imaged classical country songs as lush, soulful ballads and brassy up-tempo numbers. His take on Don Gibson's soaring ballad, I Can't Stop Loving You, spent 5 weeks at number one on the Billboard pop charts.
Sing a song, children.
I can't stop wanting you.
It's useless to say, so I'll just live my life of dreams of yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Bob Dylan first employed Nashville musicians in 1966 for his landmark album Blonde on Blonde, and another Nashville album, John Wesley Harding, followed in 1967, citing Hank Williams and Johnny Cash as major influences. That year, Dylan also made a rare network TV appearance on The Johnny Cash Show, performing three songs, including a duet with Cash on Dylan's Girl from the North Country.
If you travel it in the North Country Fair, where the winds get heavy on the borderline, remember me to one who lives there. For she once was a true love of mine.
In 1999, veteran songwriters Larry Kirtle and Larry Schell wrote a song called Murder on Music Row that got a lot of airplay, recorded by two legends of country music, George Strait and Alan Jackson. It put forth the idea that authentic country music was being murdered by those who would replace it with songs that are not country. It's an old argument that will be rehashed as long as there's a genre called country music.
Thank you. Nobody saw him running from 16th Avenue. They never found a fingerprint or the weapon that was used. But someone killed country music, cut out its heart and soul. They got away with murder down on Music Row. The almighty dollar and the lust for worldwide fame slowly killed tradition, and for that someone should hang.
Ah, you tell them, Alan.
They all say not guilty, but the evidence will show that murder was committed down on Music Row. For the steel guitars no longer cry, and fiddles barely play, but drums and rock and roll guitars are mixed up in your face.
Oh, Hank wouldn't have a chance
on today's radio. Since they committed murder down on Music Row.
The second generation of great Nashville producers was led by Billy Sherrill, who in the late 60s through the 70s and into the 80s defined much of what was hit country music. He made stars out of Tammy Wynette and Tanya Tucker. He took a piano bar singer named Charlie Rich and made him one of the biggest selling country artists of his time. And he brought George Jones to the peak of his career and kept him there for a decade, turning He Stopped Loving Her Today into a great anthem of country music. Billy pushed the writers to do their best work, and he knew how to take great songs and make great careers. Perhaps the most amazing thing about Sherrill's career is the longevity of his relationships with his artists, how he could keep them at the top of the charts for so many years. Billy had a tiny office in a flat little building at 812 16th Avenue South, less than 100 feet from the Quonset Hut, where he would produce all his great hits. One morning, Virginia Wynette Putt walked into his office. He didn't really want to see anybody that day, and she waited in the outer room, waited and waited and waited. Got to about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and he was getting ready to leave and was walking out. She's still there, and he said, I felt crappy, and I said, well, why don't you come on in? She had a tape. I said, you've got a good voice, but I really don't think these songs are strong enough. She left and went back to the Anchor Hotel a few blocks away, where she was staying overnight with her kids. There was a song that was creating a lot of noise around the country, and Billy was thinking of having a male singer do it. But then Tammy popped into his head, so he called the motel and he said, do you want to make a record? And Tammy said, I'm really not in the mood for jokes. Your place was the last place on my list to stop. 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, and we're going to make a record, Billy said. Are you serious? She asked. Yeah. In fact, come into my office around 10 or 11. Learn the song, and then we'll do two or three others of yours as well.
Just follow the stairway to this lonely world of mine. You'll find me waiting here in apartment number 9. Not so very long ago, you walked away from me, and after all the plans we made, you decided to be free. Loneliness surrounds me without your arms around. Sun
George Jones came to Epic Records as a direct result of his relationship with Tammy, whom he married in 1969. "I'd really want to record him," said Billy. "I just never did pursue it. When he signed with us, I told Tammy, I know George is used to having his own way. Most of the time, his producers were just there. I'm not a yes man. I'm a record producer, and he's going to do things the way I asked him to do, or we'll never get along." The first thing I knew about Jones, though, you never said, "We've got to do this tomorrow at 2 o'clock. You never pinned him down on a time. You'd say, "Sometime tomorrow when you're ready, we'll do this." And if you feel like it, he'll say, "Okay, what about 2 o'clock? Fine with me." Once it's his idea, he'll show. George Jones started a string of hits with Billy Sherrill, songs like "Loving You Could Never Be Better," "A Picture of Me Without You," "The Grand Tour," and "The Door," as well as huge duets with Tammy like "We're Going to Hold On" and "Golden Ring." In the late 70s, George Jones' career started to lag a little bit, partially due to his no-shows and health issues and alcoholic problems. But thanks to the next song and the dedication of Billy Sherrill, this song revived George's career, making him the CMA Male Vocalist of the Year in 1980 and 1981.
"He said, I'll love you till I die. She told him, you'll forget in time. As the years went slowly by, she still preyed upon his mind. He kept her picture on his wall, went half crazy now and then, but he still loved her through it all, hoping she'd come back again. Kept some letters by his bed, dated 1962. He had underlined in red every single I love. I went to see him just today. Oh, but I didn't see no tears. All dressed up to go away. First time I'd seen him smile in years. He stopped loving her today. They placed a wreath upon his door, and soon they'll carry him away. He stopped loving her today. You know, she came to see him one last time. Oh, and we all wondered if she would. And it kept running through my mind, this time he's over her for good. He stopped loving her today. It played door, and soon they'll carry him away. He stopped loving her today.
Billy Sherrill got really involved in that song, and he would send the lyrics back to the writers, Curly Putman and Bobby Braddock, several times, saying, "Change that, change this. You killed the guy off right up top. Wait a while, wait a while." And Billy faced a lot of criticism because of the violence added to the songs, not only from his critics, but from the record company as well. I remember reading Bobby Braddock's autobiography, and he was asked, is this the best country song ever? And Bobby said, well, I'm not sure about that, but it certainly was the best produced country song ever. Back to the Irish connection again. Derek Ryan recorded this song this year in Nashville. It's all country.
The same old stars in a Donegal pub or a Broadway bar. A fiddle is a fiddle, no matter where you are. Yeah, it's all country. You dance underneath the same old stars in a Donegal pub or a Broadway bar. A fiddle is a fiddle, no matter where you are. It don't matter where you are. It's all country.
Derek Ryan and It's All Country, and that's what Nashville is all about. Let's just look back at some of the earlier songwriters and some of the amazing songs they gave us over the years.
Together again, my tears have stopped falling. The long, lonely nights are now at an end. The key to my heart you hold in your hand, and nothing else matters. We're together again.
Make the world go away and get it off my shoulders. Say the things you used to say and make the world go away. I'm sorry if I hurt you. I'll make it up day by day. Just say you love me like you used to and make the world go away. Make the world go away and get it off my shoulders. Say the things you used to say and make the world go away. Say the things you used to say and make the world go away.
Thinking that my love could hold you, I'm crazy for trying and crazy for crying, and I'm crazy for loving you. Crazy for thinking that my you. I'm easy for loving you.
Hello, darling. Nice to see you. It's been a long time. You're just as lovely as you used to be. How's your new love? Are you happy? Hope you're doing fine. Just to know it means so much to me. What's that, darling? How am I doing? Guess I'm doing all right, except I can't sleep and I cry all night till dawn. What I'm trying to say is I love you and I miss you and I'm so sorry that I did you wrong?
Well, a lot of things have changed since way back then, and it's so good to be back home again. Not much left but the floor, nothing lives here anymore except the memories of a coal miner's daughter.
Turned 21 in prison, doing life without parole. No one could steer me right, but Mama tried. Mama tried, Mama tried to raise me better, but her pleading I denied. That leaves only me to blame, 'cause Mama tried.
I don't care who's right or wrong. I don't try to understand. Let the devil take tomorrow. Lord, tonight I need a friend. Yesterday is dead and gone, and tomorrow's out of sight. And it's sad to be alone. Help me make it through the night.
Is anybody going to San Antonio or Phoenix, Arizona? Any place is all right as long as I can forget I've ever known her.
My coat of many colors that my mama made for me. I was rich as I could be. In my coat of many colors my mama made for me. So with patches on my breeches and holes in both my shoes, in my coat of many colors I hurried off to school, just to find the others laughing and making fun of me. In my coat of many colors my mama made for me. And oh, I couldn't understand it, for I felt I was rich. And I told them all the love my mama sewed in every stitch. And I told them all the story mama told me while she sewed, and how my coat of many colors was worth more than all their clothes. they didn't understand it, and I tried to make them see that one is only poor, only if they choose to be. Now I know we had no money, but I was rich as I could be in my coat of many colors my mama made for me, made just for me.
You don't know about lonely or how long nights can be till you've lived through the story that's still living in me. You don't know about sadness till you face life alone. You don't know about lonely till it's chiseled in stone.
Little things I should have said and done, I just never took the time. But you were always on my mind. You were always on my mind. You were always on my mind. You were always on my mind.
Let's remember the musicians who sat in the background and provided that wonderful music. Jimmy Capps, Jerry Kennedy, Hargis Pig Robbins, Charlie McCoy, Floyd Kramer, Lloyd Green, Buddy Harmon, to name a few. Gene Watson did a beautiful song acknowledging the musicians called They Played It.
Pig's piano, Pete Drake's steel. You may not know them, but you know the feel of a Bob Moore bass rhyme, Buddy Harmon on the drums. The singers sang it, but they played it. They played in 4/4 time, they played the 1/4/5. Didn't always make the credits, their names weren't up in lights, but down on Music Row they made magic in the studio. Every country song you know, they played it. Texas twin fiddles, a lonesome steel ride. Good country music can make you laugh or make you cry. Help you two-step with your sweetheart. Drink a beer on Friday nights. When you feel something inside, they played it. They played in 4/4 time. They played the 1/4/5. Didn't always make the credits, their names weren't up in lights, but down on Music Row they made magic in the studio. Every country song you know, they played it.
Well, over the decades, Nashville has produced some amazing artists. In the 80s, we had Ricky Skaggs, The Judge, George Strait, Reba, Barbara Mandrell, Jeannie Fricke, Ronnie Millsap, Don Williams, Randy Travis. In the 90s, we had Clint Black, Patti Loveless, Travis Tritt, Garth Brooks. And in the noughties, we had Kenny Chesney, Brad Paisley, Keith Urban, Zac Brown, and Toby Keith. Traditional country music has still been carried on today in 2025 with artists like Zac Top, who's the next big thing in Nashville.
I sleep like a baby. I never show up late for work. Oh, and I don't drink whiskey.
goodbye. Wish I could say I miss you. Oh, but you know I never lied.
Nashville is synonymous with country music, but a new wave of pop is having its moment. The Maxim has been in Nashville that it's a 10-year town, but because of the cost of living, you can't spend 10 years here. Artists just can't put in the time and effort to hone their craft. Working musicians have to search for affordable parking, navigate streets full of slow-moving party vehicles before even starting their four-hour set and passing around the tip jar. I was fortunate enough to visit Nashville four times, all significant times in my life. In 1981 when we got married, in 1994 when I was on a business trip, and when I retired in 2013, and just a few weeks ago when I turned 70 years old. I doubt very much if I'll visit Nashville again, as in the words of Vince Gill, it's a young man's town. I hope you enjoyed this little program, Nashville and the Irish Connection.
You wake up one morning and it's passed you by. You don't know when and you don't know why. An old memory hanging around. Man, you gotta face it, it's a young man's town. Knew this day was coming all along. So why bitch and moan and say that pass it on down. This man gotta face it, it's a young man's town. It's a young man's town, full of young men's dreams. And all God's children gotta learn to spread. Watch me burn.